Well, good afternoon. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's world tour. I want to thank you for joining us. We've got a wonderful panel here to talk about healthcare. Healthcare is certainly a critical issue to every community and every family in the state, and there is an awful lot going on in healthcare reform, both on a national and a local level. So we brought some folks in to give us their perspective and to entertain any questions or concerns you might have. Again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088. Or you can send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com. Let me introduce our panel. We have my colleague at Arkansas Advocates, Marquita Little, who's the Health Policy Director. We have Dr. Sufna, who is Assistant Professor at the Department of Psychiatry at UAMS. We have Sharonda Love, Executive Director at the Arkansas Minority Health Commission. Diane Verity, who is the director of the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center. And we have Lanny Moreau, who is with a consumer advocacy group called Medicaid Saves Lives. Welcome to all of you for joining us. Hope we are able to answer all these questions. And I really do appreciate you spending part of your day with us here in the studio. So I'd like to start with Lanny. I think that the view of from a consumer's point of view on where healthcare is going is critical and something that isn't talked about enough. And I'd like to have sort of your initial comments or of what you would like to say or present.
Okay. I just want to tell you a little bit about my group. My group's called Medicaid Saves Lives. I started this group because I'm a parent of a recipient of Medicaid. And I realized that there, first of all, are a lot of complicated issues that I didn't understand. And I noticed that a lot of other people around me didn't understand them. Also, just there's a lot of changes. There's a lot of decisions being made about funding, and I didn't feel like we had a voice to talk about what we need and why we need it, because there are people who need this funding and they need it to live. It's not a luxury for them. It is a life death thing for them. They need this funding. So we have about 1,900 members at this point. We would love for anyone listening to join us. And what we do is, and what I do, is advocate and educate people who receive Medicaid and their caregivers. The ways that we do that are our website, www.medicaidsaveslives.com. We provide resources. We provide news on the latest issues. We try to help you to advocate for yourself. We regularly meet with legislators and state officials to get answers to your questions and your concerns. Our Facebook group is a really great place for Medicaid recipients and caregivers and even providers to interact with each other. But we also want to show the great things Medicaid does. Sometimes Medicaid gets a bad rap, and we have a positive message. Lives are being saved by Medicaid. I see it every single day. I see kids speaking because they are getting Medicaid. I see people walking because they are getting Medicaid. I see children getting life-saving medications. I see adults able to function in the community as a person who gets to contribute what they have to contribute to the community. So we want to spread that message to everyone. We want to show what great things it's doing. And so during the last legislative session, I worked with some of these panelists on trying to fight for patient rights. That's one thing that we've recently done. There are concerns on a state level, but also a national level. You've probably seen it on the television. So we're working on all those things. And I just invite you to check out our website. Like I said, www.medicaidsaveslives.com. You can email me at Lainey, L-A-I-N-E-Y, at medicaidsaveslives.com, or check us out on Facebook and Twitter.
All Would you say just a little bit about the legislation that you mentioned that for protecting consumers?
Definitely. There were several bills that were passed that affect Medicaid in the last regular session, which just ended not long ago. One of them was Act 775, which is the provider-led model, which is going to affect both behavioral health recipients and developmentally disabled recipients in a big way. It's going to change the way that their care is coordinated. Part of the goal of this new model is to reduce costs, so that is a concern. I actually just met with 40 DHS directors yesterday to communicate concerns of the people and to ask questions on how this is going to work. What do we expect?
Well, that sounds very promising to have at least some legislated input from consumers. So that's a mm-hmm. really good thing. And congratulations for you all
thanks.
Being able to get that done. Next, I'd like to ask Diana Verity, who is director of the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center. I know you two look at it from a parental view and are responsible for reaching out to folks on Medicaid, probably.
We do. Thank you, Paul, for having me here today. So what I do at the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center is I work to provide training and technical assistance and information and referral. Basically, what we do is we help families who have children on the autism spectrum figure out what next steps to take. We also try to help other members of the community outside of the autism community know how to better support people with autism. Lainey and I saw each other quite a bit at the Capitol during the session.
We did.
She did a fantastic job
Thanks.
Advocating for the disability community. I was thrilled that she was there. We saw a lot of policies and legislation that have come about in the last several months that give some of us pause, that make us a little bit concerned. The biggest concern is that there are going to be just some arbitrary cuts to some really critical services for people with disabilities, both children and adults. We are hoping to continue to work with the legislature and the administration and the Department of Human Services to ensure that that doesn't happen. Theoretically, all of the changes that are coming down the pike are supposed to be really good for people. And I think my goal, and I'm pretty sure this is Lainey's goal too, is to make sure that theory that the theory behind it is what they stick to, rather mm-hmm. than just arbitrary cuts to achieve savings.
Right. There's still some changes ahead, I understand, and we'll be talking about that, at least potential changes more. We can't read what everybody's thinking, but we will be, I'm sure you all will be keeping track of that. So, Dr. Sufna, I know you are, who is an assistant professor at the Department of Psychiatry at UAMS, and I understand you deal a lot with young children. So talk a little bit about what you do and there and what you'd like to share.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I'm Sufna John. Like you said, I'm an assistant professor at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. I'm also a member of the Arkansas Building Effective Services for Trauma, the RBEST program there at UAMS, as well as a member of the Arkansas Association for Infant Mental Health.
Okay.
So there's a lot of partners that we work with to try to enhance the care that young children, infants, toddlers, and preschoolers receive around their mental health services. I think one of the main barriers that we run into is families accessing care for young children with mental health difficulties. I think there's a common kind of misconception that, oh, they don't remember anything, they're just going to be resilient and bounce back from these difficulties. this is just a six-month-old. How would we do therapy with them? What would that even look like? And I think that serves as a barrier, because what ends up happening is families get the message that their children are too young to receive services, not only from their community members, but frankly from a lot of professionals as well that don't really have an understanding of what the needs look like in this population. So really, one of the goals of the Our Best program is to educate our community as well as train providers in what we call evidence-based treatments. What that means is basically we have evidence to show that these treatments work. They work for families and work for children. The challenge for some families is getting in the door in the first place to a mental health provider. And once they get in the door, they're not always receiving those gold standard treatments that we know work. So our commitment is really to train the workforce across the state for young children. So no matter where they live in Arkansas, when they go to a mental health provider, they're getting the best treatment.
And that's covered by the Medicaid program. So all people would be eligible for that if there's...
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah, so it's covered by Medicaid. It's covered by private insurance as well. I think one of the pushes that we try to help kind of families understand is that for young children who are in mental health treatment, their caregivers are such an integral part of them getting better. And so if you're a parent and your young child is receiving predominantly individual therapy, what we know is those aren't the best services for children to get better in the mental health field. We really need a lot of parent and family support to help children use those skills that we're teaching them.
And that's certainly important for all children interventions, is the involvement of parents in that. I know that in pre-K we always talk about the neurological brain development and the speed and veracity for which is happening at a younger age, and how any kind of trauma or problems can actually really have definite long-term impacts on that in other ways that will affect the child. So
that's absolutely correct. And what the exciting thing is that, you know, several of the treatments that are evidence-based for young children, so trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, parent-child interaction therapy, child-parent psychotherapy, have demonstrated effects not only to improve emotional and behavioral and developmental function, but we also see changes in the way your body on a physiological level responds to stress. Uh-huh. And so we're able to mitigate some of those, you know, help prevent those problems from escalating and really help those kids get back onto a developmental trajectory that we'd like to see.
And I would imagine some of the problems result from stress and strain that are also on the parent. So you're talking about dealing with all of those factors that are playing into it, right?
Yes, absolutely. And so all evidence-based treatments for young children involve significant caregiver components, because they're the most important people in their children's lives. And for many families, they are dealing with chronic stress and other barriers that get in the way of them being the kind of parent that they envision themselves and want to be. I've yet to really run into a parent that doesn't love their child and want best by their child. Right. It's just about supporting families to achieve the goals that they have for themselves.
Right. Thank you. I want to remind you, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088, or you can send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com. Sharonda Love, with the Executive Director of the Arkansas Minority Health Commission, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us, and talk a little bit about your organization and the focus that you all have.
Thanks for having me today, Paul. The Arkansas Minority Health Commission's mission is to ensure that all minority Arkansans have access to health and health care that is equitable to the majority population, as well as to ensure that health and preventive diseases are educated with our minority populations. And so our initiated act defined minorities as African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Native American, American Indian, and Asian American. We have since added our Marshallese population to that minority group as well. And so the health of minorities impact the health of our state. And so some of our initiatives include our Southern Ain't Fried Sundays, which is an initiative with African American and Hispanic churches, as well as individuals who are interested in a 21-day nutrition and healthy eating program. And we will work with those individuals or church groups to implement the program to have a healthier lifestyle. We also have our Camp IROC initiative that we've worked with adolescent girls from ages 12 to 16 to have health and nutrition initiative, as well as work with their self-esteem. One of our newest initiatives will be our mobile health unit, where we will literally have a clinic on wheels, and we will provide access to preventive screenings in areas that are of most need. Those areas include our Delta counties, Northwest Arkansas for our Marshallese population, and Southwest Arkansas for our Hispanic population. What we know is that our minorities have a disproportionate effect for chronic conditions, and we want to make sure that they have access to life screening or life-saving screenings. And in May, we will have our State of Minority Health, where we will address Medicaid in the state and health issues that impact minorities.
Okay. Talk a little bit more about the disparities and the cultural kind of things that arise in the treatment of things. I know that, of course, different groups have unique kinds of health problems and concerns, but helping people overcome sort of the not necessarily health, but also the cultural barriers that may arise in providing health to these populations.
Paul, you make a good point that the health that impacts minorities is not just physical, but it's cultural. We have learned behaviors and learned traditions that impact the way we live our lives, and then therefore affect the health of minorities. There's also disparities in where we live. We know that populations in the Delta live less than their lifespan is less than those that are born in Northwest Arkansas. And so there are access issues there, and not just being able to access getting to the doctor, having insurance to actually see the doctor. There's also health literacy implications there, because just because someone has access to health insurance doesn't mean they will necessarily know how to use it or how to get to the doctor. Do they have access to food in areas? We think about food deserts or areas where you cannot access food in our Delta counties, in our Southeast Arkansas counties. However, if you just think about Little Rock here, we're on Main Street. There's a grocery store here on Main Street, but if you go down Asher, there's not another grocery store until you get to Colonel Glenn at Kroger's. And so that's definitely a food desert here, and lack of access to food will impact the health of the population.
So it isn't just an individual problem, it is a larger macro issue about all the factors that come into the disparities that happen, and you listed all of them. So so that's you can keep yourself busy at the legislature dealing with both the individual and all the macro issues.
Yes.
And I'm looking around the room, I'm saying it's sure good to have all of you all working on the same things, because it is very complicated, and your perspective is really important. And, again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can give us a call. We've got all these smart, wonderful people here in the studio with me, and they'd be happy to hear from listeners about this. I know healthcare is got to be the concern in just about everybody's life at whatever stage you're at and whatever circumstances you find yourself in. And it's certainly something that you need to pay attention to. The older you get, you realize the implications of your health and diet and all the other practices that lead to that that will impact your longevity. So, Marquita, I know that you have you've had a busy day listening to issues about healthcare. So, talk a little bit about perhaps first introducing what may be coming up in that, or make that part of what you talk about.
Sure. So, like you, Paul, I'm really excited to be in the room today with so many of our partners and colleagues that we work closely with at Arkansas Advocates. As we work on our health policy agenda and initiative as well. So the last time I was here a couple weeks ago, I kind of gave a post-legislative session update and talked about some of the important bills that were passed. And one of the key issues that we talked about is the access to coverage issue and the fact that there had been legislation, two bills that were introduced while we were in session that would have one would have capped enrollment in our Medicaid expansion Arkansas Works program for those low-income adults, and the other would have eliminated the program altogether, but those pieces of legislation didn't move forward. And I think the reason that those didn't move forward was because Governor Hutchinson announced that we were going to have a special session just dedicated to healthcare. So in terms of what's coming up, the first week in May, we're anticipating that lawmakers will reconvene specifically to make some decisions regarding the healthcare system. There could be some other issues on the call, but we know at the very least that we're anticipating some additional changes to our healthcare system. And so that's one of the reasons why I think today's conversation is so important, because we have everyone here who works on healthcare issues, but kind of representing that from different perspectives and different populations, who are all, though, collectively impacted by these decisions we make. And so what we spend so much time talking about Medicaid, because almost half of kids in the state of Arkansas are covered by the Medicaid program. We spend so much time talking about Arkansas Works or Medicaid expansion, because you have over 300,000 people in the state. And so these are folks who might not have access to care otherwise. So this May discussion with lawmakers is going to be hugely important as the state continues to explore making additional changes to those programs that cover a lot of the folks we are talking about today, or if not the children, the parents and caregivers of those kids. And I think the most important part of, thinking about these public policy changes is putting a real face to them and thinking about the actual impact that they have. And so, again, that's why this conversation is so important, because these policies and policy changes affect people in very real ways. And some of those are really positive outcomes from our legislative session because of the hard work of a lot of folks in this room. But we still have a lot of issues that we're continuing to work on that are more concerning than others in terms of creating new barriers that prevent access for populations that oftentimes already have some trouble accessing the right kind of services.
Again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're talking about health care and particularly Medicaid. Call and tell us how Medicaid may have had an impact on your life or someone in your family. It's an important issue, and we need to have folks advocating for themselves and each other to make sure that this the progress that we have made. I know, let me ask you just a general question. What is it that you think most keeps people from not enrolling or participating in Medicaid?
Sure. Well, within the disability population, it happens fairly seamlessly. It should, anyway. Most children, when they're diagnosed with a developmental disability, enter onto the Medicaid rolls almost immediately, within a few months. And the majority of their care, therapies and doctor visits and long-term supports when they become adults are all provided by Medicaid. There are some gaps, though. You know, sometimes families are given bad information by people who may not work within the Department of Human Services but think they know how to access Arkansas Medicaid. Sometimes they just, if it's a parent of a child with a disability, they may just assume that they make too much money. We have a wonderful program in Arkansas called TEFRA, where families who make more than, I think it's 300% of the federal poverty level, can actually purchase Medicaid coverage for their child. And without that, I mean, you really can't access much. Private insurance doesn't cover much for most developmental disabilities. The one exception is autism, because we have an insurance mandate for autism. But if you have a child with another developmental disability and you expect your private insurance to cover the cost of therapies like speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, it's very likely that none of that will be covered. So most children in the state of Arkansas and adults with developmental disabilities rely almost exclusively on Arkansas Medicaid.
And if I could, Paul, I'm just going to extend your question a little bit further and talk about why people just don't enroll and participate in the healthcare system. And the reason I said I want to extend it a little bit further is because I was just in a really interesting meeting yesterday, and we were talking about all of the people who enrolled in our Arkansas Works or Medicaid expansion program. But when you look at the number of people who just went to the health insurance marketplace, signed up for coverage, and are taking advantage of tax credits or subsidies that help them pay the premium, the uptake is really, really low, even though 9 out of 10 people who go to that marketplace to shop for coverage would qualify for some type of help. So I think the first and most common reason is folks just don't know what they're eligible for. They don't know that there are affordable coverage programs available. All they know about is Medicaid, and some might not even realize that they're qualified for that. And then they don't realize that you might actually qualify for tax credits to help you reduce the cost. Once they actually get enrolled, I think the next step is making sure that they're accessing care and accessing it properly. And so, you know, I think one of the big hurdles in the area where we have to do a lot more work in our state, and Sharonda talked about this a bit, in terms of that cultural shift and the behavioral piece of it, you have folks who've traditionally been completely left out of the healthcare system in many cases. And so we can't just give them a card and think that they automatically know how to appropriately utilize preventative services, that they even have a PCP. You have cultural barriers, you have a workforce that doesn't share the same cultural background, and so there's just any number of issues. And so it's this really broad spectrum of how do we improve access to coverage, as well as improving access to care and making sure it's the right type of care.
Is there any place or specific site or telephone number to get the kind of information they would need to negotiate that? And, you know, I know also you were talking about cultural things. I was thinking about, yeah, there's a lot of people who, if they go to the doctor, they're going to lose money at their job site, too. I mean, mm-hmm. It's all something, and that's particularly true for people in low wage. And so they don't go to the doctor in many cases for prevention, because they got to wait for a problem before they're going to give up a couple hours of salary. So
it has to be a big problem for them to not work during that time. I was going to say, people are living paycheck to paycheck. They are working as hard as they can. They have children. Their time is really packed to the max. And sometimes it's hard to understand a letter you received, and it's easier to put it in the stack and kind of forget about it. And the next thing you know, you've missed an opportunity or a deadline, or they've turned off your Medicaid and you don't know how to get it back. You don't know how to appeal. It can be confusing. I would say one of my goals is to provide that information to help people on our website, to give them resources on how to apply, who is eligible. Know that it's also the goal of the panelists in here, and I try to work with them also to get information. Like, we collaborating, we reach more people, so I try to work with them to get that information on my site and just try and get the best information out to as many people as we possibly can.
And I'll just briefly plug that. We also produced a guide at Arkansas Advocates in response to the need to have some type of material or literature out there. And so we do have a consumer guide to how you access care. If you go on our website, www.aradvocates.org, you have to look around a bit. But under our health section, we have a guide. And we distributed those guides actually to almost every group in the room, and those who I haven't given any to, I'll make sure y'all get those, because we tried to make sure that we got those guides out to organizations that actually have the direct day-to-day contact with families.
All right, and reminding listeners again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. This is a live radio show. We've got some good people in the room ready to respond to any questions or concerns that you have. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088. Dr. John, would you speak some to, I've really honed in on the importance of early intervention, even for healthy children, and the importance of helping parents navigate that. Hang on, we have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I would like to talk to someone. I have been thrown off the rolls of affordable care for not making enough, and I went to Arkansas Medicaid, and I make $44 too much.
All right.
So I'm stuck in between and don't know what to do.
Somebody want to... She talked about getting thrown off the rolls and doesn't know what to do.
Okay. I need a set of headphones.
That's okay. So let me, I think I heard what you said was you didn't qualify for a subsidy because you were in between that minimum income for subsidies through the exchange, and then you make too much money to qualify for the Medicaid coverage. Is that correct?
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. So, Marquita may have an answer. I don't have an answer. I know that this is one of the things that...
Is she talking to me?
Yes,
yes,
she
ma'am.
Is.
I can't hear a single word she's saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Do I need to turn on my radio?
Well, you should be able to hear it over the air. I don't know what's happening. Do you hear me?
I can hear you. Oh, God.
Okay.
So this is something that has captured the attention of advocates, definitely at the national level. It's something that...
Can you hear now?
Yes, I'm listening to it on the radio.
All right.
Okay, good. It's something that advocates have been watching very carefully and really pressing Congress to do something about. There are people who are stuck in sort of this donut hole of affordable coverage, and my understanding, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that the fix for that may have to happen at the national level. Is that correct?
Yeah, but yes, that is correct. Here's what I would encourage you to do. A lot of folks who may end up in your situation, especially with the difference being so small, I would encourage you maybe to reach out to someone who could sit down with you, maybe an enrollment assister who can sit down with you and look at your individual situation and make sure that you were appropriately, you know, denied for coverage in each of those instances. What if you don't mind me asking, what county are you in?
Pulaski.
Okay. So call Future Builders. They have enrollment assisters at Future Builders, and someone can sit down with you and go through all of that, because, I mean, you're exactly right. There certainly is this gap where some people still are falling through for various glitches in terms of eligibility for these programs. But it's really helpful in those instances, I think, when you can have someone who can sit down with you, walk through your specific situation, and make sure that you are not being inappropriately denied and the right type of income is counting. So I would really encourage you to do that. And then I'll just say this is why we have to really push in terms of a policy level for a greater investment in outreach and enrollment so that there are people statewide, which we had at one time, by the way, before some legislative decisions were made to cut funding for enrollment assisters and for that education and outreach piece. But it's really important for folks to have someone they can go and sit down with. Enrolling in insurance is as complicated as doing your taxes, and we wouldn't tell someone to try to figure that out on their own. So.
Okay, great.
Lanny,
thank you very much.
All right. Do you want to repeat where that is that you?
I'm sure. So there's a broader, actually, organization that provides some of that assistance, enrollment assistance. They have a, we call them navigators. So the navigator organization in our state is Enroll the Ridge. But they have also a partnership here locally in Pulaski County or in Little Rock. You could reach out to Future Builders. So either place could direct you accordingly.
What was the first one? Enroll what?
Enroll the Ridge.
RIDGE.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. All right. I think I was getting ready to talk about, what was I getting ready to talk? Younger folks and just the whole, the importance of caregiving and availability of services for infants and toddlers.
Yeah, it is a discrepancy that we see for young children. I myself specialize in the mental health treatment of young children who have been exposed to trauma. And so what we know is that 0 to 5-year-olds experience 50% of the maltreatment reports that we have in the state. And the most vulnerable age for maltreatment is 0 to 1, is our newborns and our infants who are kind of the most vulnerable. And so the good news is that we have those treatments that work. The difficult news is that many families are not able to access those services, particularly in underserved regions of the state. And so that really is a charge for our BEST program, but also for our partners as well, to try to figure out how do we train the workforce better in early intervention so practitioners feel comfortable and competent to provide those services and families can be assured that if they can make it over all these hurdles that we've been talking about and actually get in the door, that once they're in the door, they can feel confident that they're receiving something we know is effective. And caregivers are a large part of what we know makes child intervention effective, not because they're to blame, but because of their importance in their child's life. When we think about resilience to mental health and to trauma specifically, what we know is that one trusted, caring, supportive relationship with an adult is the single most predictive factor of resilience in the face of trauma. And so we need to build our caregivers as much as we need to build our children, if not more.
Right. And I know home visiting programs are around, but they certainly are not very widespread or available. And it also, I think it's important for folks to realize that many times the parents of infants are very young with no experience, with no family support, with problems they don't understand, and you know, if you don't have someone in your life to help you work through that, it's important to be able to reach out and find that kind of support. And I know that the HIPPE program, and I think there's Follow the Baby Back Home or some of the other parents as teachers. But if you find yourself in that situation, don't be afraid to ask for help, and people will be open to coming to that. We all understand how difficult it can be.
Yeah, you know, especially, you know, I tell families all the time to, you know, trust your gut. So you know your kids better than any professional does. So my families, their parents, you know, parents know kids better than a psychologist would know that individual child. You're the expert on your child. And so if you have that gut feeling that your child is not doing the same things that other children would be their age, maybe they can't handle their emotions or they're acting out more than you would expect other kids to be doing. I think parents have a fear that is justifiably based at times that they're going to come in for services and they're going to be immediately blamed for all of these quote-unquote failures that they have as a parent, when really what we know is that it is our community's responsibility to build up families for everybody. And so I really encourage families to, you know, access services that we have available, because we know how to help and we want to partner with you to do that.
And also to call, because you may not be, it may not be a mental health issue. It may be a family support issue. It may be, you know, something that you need to help get through that. So, again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. The conversation is about healthcare, specifically the widespread use of Medicaid in Arkansas and its importance in our health and economic well-being. And does anybody else have something they'd like to add to all of this? Something that I haven't asked yet? You may have a question.
Talk about long-term care, maybe.
Long-term care? Yeah.
So some of the biggest changes that are happening within the Medicaid program have to do with how people with developmental disabilities are supported in the community through a Medicaid waiver program, where they receive services in the home, like attendant care, that allows them to stay at home and in the community rather than go into an institution or a nursing home. The changes that are coming down around Arkansas Medicaid for this population is almost a complete upheaval of the system as it exists today. And customers and patients are terrified of what's coming down the pike. I had mentioned a little bit earlier that theoretically the plan moving forward should provide a more comprehensive sort of global approach to care that incorporates regular medical care and long-term care in the home. But again, the devil will be in the details for that. Lainey, did you want to say some things about that? Lainey's been going to a bunch of meetings about this.
Yes, I've been to many a meeting about it.
Is this the old issue of over-institutionalizing and are spending too much money on those kinds of programs?
Well, so we have about 4,100, almost 4,200 people with significant developmental disabilities across the state who are of all ages, both children and adults, who remain in the home thanks to a program called Alternative Community Services Waiver, Medicaid Waiver. That program has been in place for many, many years, and it's really, to my way of thinking, it is the star in our crown. It's one of the best programs we have in the state of Arkansas. It is being sort of overhauled. And right now what we have is basically a fee-for-service model where providers are reimbursed for specific services that they provide to those customers, those consumers in the community. This is being changed through the enacting legislation and through some policy changes at DHS to, it's called a risk-based provider organization model. Basically, it's managed care. Now, managed care has a kind of a bad rap. I think it can be done well. I think it can be done well if you set the right goals and if you keep an eye on what you're doing moving forward. And I think that that's what Lainey definitely has been working with DHS toward. But the fear, of course, for people who rely on these services, who would not be at home in the community without them, is that the system is going to change so much that their services are going to be cut and that they're not going to be able to remain in the community.
Yes. We can talk about what to expect if you are one of those people. And the first thing that you can expect is they're going to do an assessment of you, what your needs are if you are in this population. So this is a huge, like she said, a huge overhaul. It's going to take some time for them to be able to do this. It's not going to be an immediate change on July 1st. So they're going to bring in this independent assessor, person who looks at your needs, therapy, medical, everything that you need. And they make this plan for you. There's supposed to be a care coordinator, which I'm personally excited about. One person that I can call if I have a problem or you have a problem and get an answer from them, or expect them to get you an answer instead of trying to chase it down. But the first thing, and I've been told they will make it extremely clear, they will contact you in every way possible to get you assessed before you get enrolled into this new system. So that's kind of the red flag. Wait for that.
And would anything on the federal level have any impact on that?
I actually asked that question yesterday, and I know that you have it also. They didn't seem concerned about it. They said that DHS will adjust if it is necessary. I know that block grants are very concerning to many people, many populations, not just disability populations, but many populations, because it will be, however large, still a limited amount, and our population grows every year.
Okay.
So, well, yeah. Did you want to add to it, Dinah?
No, I think I would say amen and hallelujah to good care coordination. Mm-hmm. I think that that's incredibly beneficial. As a parent of a child who has a disability, I can attest to the fact that, and having worked with families who have children with autism, that parents are usually the care coordinators for all of their children's care. And it's a lot. It's a lot to manage, and it's a lot to keep up with. Oftentimes what you find is that, children are being served by 4, 5, 6, sometimes as many as 8 different providers for therapies and other supportive services and then medical services. And oftentimes, one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. And so good comprehensive care coordination is an excellent addition to what we have right now.
Definitely. And I mean, the national level American Health Care Act, or the repeal of the ACA and how it would affect our kids or other programs, is a huge concern. I know you all could probably comment on that.
Yeah, I think it. There are multiple levels here to understand, and with disparities come the ability to not just have access to care, but it's how do you actually connect with someone to get that access. Then once you've connected, you have to have the ability to understand what they are telling you. And so having care coordinators or people who are able to explain things in plain language so that they are able to utilize it for their benefit is going to be of utmost importance. Because to just provide it but not give an avenue or an access to be able to utilize the care and the access that's needed would just be detrimental to the population. So care coordinators and having individuals who are able to guide the populations along the way is important.
And I would add, I would encourage anyone listening who has these concerns to contact your U.S. congressmen, your state legislators. They're having public forums that you can go to and you can talk to them. Someone in my group talked to Womack, I think, and she stood right in front of him with a sign with a picture of her child, and she explained to him in very educated language why a block grant is very concerning to her. And I think those are the most powerful ways that we can reach them.
And it is important to make it personal and make sure that those that represent you understand that how it impacts your personal life, and so that they then make it a priority for them as well. So our representatives, our congressmen, making sure that they are aware of what your needs and priorities are.
All right, I want to remind you, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF 88.3. The phones are open, 501-433-0088.
So I was just going to add, for the listeners who are not able to tune in, if you want to go back and listen to our April 5th show, I talked a lot more about the whole funding Medicaid piece in the federal conversation that's happening. I think the big issue is that it's not over, right? So the bill that was introduced wasn't voted on at the federal level, but it's still... We certainly are going to see some more changes. So I'm just going to echo what everyone else has said. Those family stories are the most powerful tool that we have. This happened to me, and I've been kind of working in health policy for several years here. And was this most recent legislative session, I was talking with an Arkansas lawmaker about a particular bill. I think it might have been the organized care one funding, something about funding for Medicaid. And I was asking sort of where he stands on it and making my case for, you know, why we need to continue a program in a particular way. And he shared, you know, his perspective, and he said, you know, but I've only had one constituent call me. And I know that there are a whole lot of constituents in this particular lawmaker's district who are benefiting from the particular programs that we're talking about today. And he said, I only had one constituent call me. So more than me coming in with my long list of facts and fact sheets, and us even, you know, talking about it here today, that is incredibly powerful for lawmakers to hear from their constituents. And you don't have to be some expert at policy and, you know, all of that, right? You're just a person who's going to be impacted by it, and you tell how that's going to impact you and why a particular policy decision is important.
Hello, you're on the air.
I didn't have anything specific to say, but I'm just here. I'm so overwhelmed by the generosity and the effort and the drive and the people you have there today are passionate about the program of helping people. We all know that their compensation is not near what it should be, and they do this out of love for humanity. And I'm in tears. I just thank you all so much for what you do, and everybody else that's not on this program and does similar work. I'm just eternally grateful, and that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. That made our day, right?
That was my pay. That's what I need.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is so hard for folks to feel like they can actually stand up to what are perceived as complicated, difficult to maneuver issues, and to get active in a way that will have an impact. I can assure you that you can... You can contact the Medicaid Save Lives, the Minority Health Commission, Arkansas Advocates, and lots of other folks. If you are out there and you want to kind of help us do this, then, and you have been affected by Medicaid in a positive way, or have struggled with some things, do call in and do contact your legislator, because again, this is going to be looked at in May, and so it's not too late nor too early to give them a call and let them know. And you can contact any of these folks on this panel, and I'm sure they'll steer you in the right direction. So thank you. And I certainly appreciate what these folks do too. It's been a joy to hang out with you in this in the studio today, and some of you I've just first met. We only have about 6 minutes left, and we'd sure like to have another caller. If you want to give us a call, a ring here at 501-433-0088. And if you're a shy person and don't want to go on the radio, you can send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com, and we'll answer your question or share your concern.
Can I just give you my contact info again? I'm sure everybody might want to, because we want you to join us. There's strength in numbers. So my particular contact information is the website, www.MedicaidSavesLives.com, Laney, L-A-I-N-E-Y, at MedicaidSavesLives.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, and also we have a mailing address. If none of the internet doesn't work for you, please mail us a letter or something. And that address is 17200 Chenal Parkway, Suite 300, number 243 in Little Rock, 72223.
So, all right. Thank you, Lanny. And that's, we want folks to get involved in this. Our lives, all of our lives depend on it. We're all interconnected here, and it's what's good for all of us. For one of us is good for all of us. So we'd appreciate you sharing your concerns with us.
And Paul, if I could also add, the Minority Health Commission will have our State of Minority Health on May 18th at the Embassy Suites from 5:30 to 7:30, and Marquita Little will be one of the panelists, along with Senator Linda Chesterfield, Representative Reginald Murdoch, Dr. Eddie Ochoa, and Director Cindy Gillespie from DHS, and Dr. Greg Bledsoe, our Surgeon General, will bring an address that evening as well, where we will discuss Medicaid in the state.
And that's after your working hour, and you'll have all the players there, and you can go up and talk to them personally. So, and say that again, when is it and where?
That will be May 18th, 5:30 to 7:30 at the Embassy Suites here in Little Rock.
Out on Chenal Parkway?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, so I guess I have to share about our upcoming events, too, with Arkansas Advocates. So we do a series of we actually do pre-legislative meetings. We're also going to do post-legislative conferences, and we try to do them in key regions of the state so that folks can't make it to, you know, Little Rock, they can go to the one in Jonesboro. So for the full list, you can go to our site, website with all of the details, www.aradvocates.org. But we are going to have one coming up in Jonesboro. We'll have one coming up in one in Northwest Arkansas, and I think that one's in Springdale, and we'll also have one that's coming up in Little Rock. And so I encourage you to go to our website and get those various dates and sign up for to attend one of those in your area. And we typically have an update on all of the key issues beyond healthcare, on education, child welfare, and we also try to have a legislative panel on each of those events as well.
And that's at no cost. You can walk in off the street and join all of us. So.
Yeah, you know, and I'd like to add that April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and so to learn more about kind of trauma and the effects that it has on young children and what our state is kind of doing to better the care for young children, really all children, you can go to arbest.uams.edu. That's A-R-B-E-S-T. We're on Facebook as well, and as well as checking out the Arkansas Association for Infant Mental Health, AAIMH.org.
All right.
I just have one upcoming conference to plug. We have Dr. Eric Carter coming from Vanderbilt University. He's going to be here June 23rd and June 24th, and he's going to be talking about including people with disabilities in mainstream settings, particularly including students with significant disabilities in general education classrooms, and how to do that well, and how to foster relationships and friendships with their peers. And that's for the Friday conference. For the Saturday conference, he's going to be speaking to communities of faith and churches and talking about how to provide support and assistance to your families who are affected by disability, including supported employment, so helping people with significant disabilities find and maintain employment.
I want to thank our panelists. We have Dr. Sopna John, Marquita Little with the Health Policy Director at Arkansas Advocates, Dr. Johns with the Department of Psychiatry, Sharonda Love, who's the Executive Director of Arkansas Minority Health, Diana Verity, Director of the Arkansas Autism Resource and Outreach Center, and Lady Moreau, who is with Medicaid Saves Lives. Thank all of you very much for being here, and thank you for listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF.
This is KABF 88.3 FM in Little Rock, the voice of the people for all of Arkansas.
It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, interviews with some of your favorite musical artists on Arkansas Sounds, content from the Butler Center's collections,